Do our people feel valued and engaged? Do we express the gratitude to them for their work and all their sacrifices on a regular basis?
Culture, 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 culture. Hey, have you ever heard about this term called culture? I think it's kind of important. It's gotten a little bit of publicity, Jaime, I think, over the last few months, years. What do you think?
Yeah, I'd say so.
But you know what? Culture's been around for a long time, especially as we think about how it impacts our people within the workforce. Our next guests, they know a little bit about culture. They've written a few books related to the workforce, specifically one on culture. Adrian Gostick and Chester Elton are our next guests on the pod. Adrian and Chester have jam-packed credentials, working with some of the world's biggest organizations, books translated into every language, speaking across the globe. Here's just a few other books you might have heard of: All In, How the Best Managers Create a Culture of Belief and Drive Big Results; Leading with Gratitude, which is 8 Leadership Practices for Extraordinary Business Results; and The Carrot Principle, How the Best Managers Use Recognition to Engage Their People, Retain Talent, and Accelerate Performance. There could be nothing more important right now that we should be thinking about, and many are thinking about this from just the conversations I've been having over the last several months. It's all about culture. Martin Rooney, another guest of our podcast who wrote the book High 10, another bestseller, said culture eats everything else for breakfast. So I wanted to talk to Adrian and Chester about what they're seeing on the front lines as they travel across the globe, whether that's virtually or actually in person, to help organizations and learn about what's happening today with brands that are winning and brands that are losing. So with that, I'm done talking. Let's bring it in.
Adrian, maybe it'd be good to start with you out of the gate. Maybe give a little background on how you got to writing and talking about things like employee engagement and culture.
You know, we began this about 20 years ago, Sam, with our first book, and the idea was around employee recognition. We were working with a lot of companies and helping build employee recognition programs. Our work then started to evolve because, you know, leaders would tell us, look, it's one thing to thank employees, but if the culture's not right, then nothing's right. We wrote a book called All In about corporate culture, and it really has expanded our work to really think about, you know, as you talk about positive cultures. We went into teamwork, and we came back to this idea of gratitude in a book we wrote last year called Leading with Gratitude. Most recently, we're really excited about a book we're putting out actually on May 4th. It's called Anxiety at Work. And this is how you build a positive culture where you have a lot of resilience in your people.
Yeah, I would just add to that, you know, Peter Drucker said 100 years ago, it seems like that, you know, culture eats strategy for breakfast. And it was true then, and it's true now. So really all our work is under that culture umbrella. How do you engage, enable, and energize your people? And of course, that led us to write more about leaders. You know, leaders set the tone. The way a leader acts gives everyone permission to act the same way. What was really wonderful is we found this thread of gratitude through all of that. That great cultures really appreciated the people that worked with and for them. Certainly they had tough conversations and had to correct things that were going wrong. And yet at the same time, were very encouraging and validated people. So whether it was Leading with Gratitude or our book All In on culture, that they cheer for each other, even with our anxiety book, you know, there are 8 strategies, you know, to deal with anxiety. And the 8th strategy is how to use gratitude to tamp it down, you know, that you can't be in a state of anxiety and a state of gratitude at the same time. So if you have a choice, we always say, hey, choose gratitude, because that choosing anxiety is just going to make you anxious.
That's interesting. Are there any, I'd love to hear any specifics on that point on gratitude. I mean, it's so, with so much technology today, I'd wonder, there's probably all types of empty forms of gratitude or shallow forms of gratitude. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but it's almost, you know, sending a Slack message isn't necessarily, you know what I'm saying? From a technology perspective, has that made it tough to show true gratitude?
I don't think so. You know, I really think that it just depends what you said on that Slack thing. you know, I mean, we talk about being very specific. and being genuine. I think if that's all you're doing, yeah, I think it comes across as pretty hollow. We talk about general praise has no impact. You know, it's kind of like the boss that comes in with the finger guns, you know, hey, great job, everybody. Hey, great job. You know, that becomes pretty hollow. I think that what technology has allowed us to do is a myriad of ways to connect, right? Even if you're disparate, you can Zoom call, you know, you can use the Slack channel, you can do a lot of things digitally. I do hope we get back soon to the in-person. We've got a great story about a company we were dealing with where a woman hadn't had a hug in 6 months. And there's something just nice about a hug, you know, as long as you clear it through HR.
Well, as long as you're, you know, not English too. We don't really hug in England. So, yeah. You know, and one of the things I think, you know, Jester's right though, is that, you know, one size does not fit all. You know, some people may love, you know, the IT group, they may think that my Slack, you know, gratitude is awesome. Others, you know, like Jester, you know, want a much more in-person, that personal touch. It's really what we've found with all of culture building. You know, we've been studying employee engagement now for 40 years, and employee engagement scores haven't been going up. Why? Well, it's because we try to do it as this macro thing. We found out that actually engagement cannot be moved by macro ideas. It's person by person, and it's hard. So you have to find out what motivates each person and what sort of gratitude is going to be most meaningful to the person. And yeah, it takes a little bit more work, but it really does produce the kind of returns we're all looking for.
Where have you found the most success with your strategies inside of organizations? And I ask that because coming out of the pandemic, when there's layoffs, usually HR, there's a part of the HR group that goes out with X number of furloughs to frontline. And I just wonder where you've seen the most success. You know, it seems like there's so many roles emerging. There's talent, there's L&D, there's now employee experience and employee engagement specific job titles.
Yeah.
What do you think has worked best?
Well, I'll jump in first. And, you know, one of the things that's interesting, Sam, is sometimes people will say, oh, you guys must work with some really diseased cultures. Those, you know, you see them on the news, they must call you in. They go, no, those cultures never call us, nor will they ever call us. You know, we get actually called into the really good cultures that want to keep improving. And I love you, just what you're saying there too. There are now people, all their job is to worry about the employee engagement experience, culture experience. Many organizations we're working with, they have cultural ambassadors. I've done a lot of sessions where they'll bring in 100 cultural ambassadors. None of them are leaders. They're people just who have influence throughout the organization. That they're people that are the touchstones that say, hey, Sam, when you act in this way, it's not really living our values. Let me take you aside and help you with that. Yeah, that's a really powerful way of inculcating culture throughout an organization.
Yeah, I mean, we work a lot with HR, as you might guess. I'll tell you where you get the best results, though, is when the top leader buys in, when the CEO, when she or he really embraces it. It makes all the difference. Just on the on Zoom today with the CEO of a credit union in the Pacific Northwest. And as they evaluate all their leaders, he said that we've made evaluation on culture our number one priority this year. Well, if it's going to be the number one priority from the CEO and there's a matrix to measure it, things get done. So yeah, we deal with all those different departments. I tell you where we love to sit though is to be the manager's best friend. You know, in our books, a lot of managers buy our books because they've got people that work with and for them, and they're looking for the tools to execute on the promise. So even if it doesn't come from the CEO, you can self-educate as they can with the wonderful apps and stuff that you do as you gamify. Best place to start though, as always, is the top of the pyramid.
How do you evaluate culture, Chester? What's the best scorecard? I'm assuming it's not looking at Glassdoor because that would just drive me to happy hour a little bit early.
Yeah, you know, the thing with glass doors is if you don't put the stickers on them, you just smash into them all the time.
And different kind of glass door.
Oh, thanks, Adrian. Anyway, you know, different companies will set it up different ways. It'll have to do with your 360 evaluation. you know, with the people that report to you and so on. There are other metrics that are fairly easy to monitor, you know, turnover, you know, engagement scores, and so on. And of course, in a lot of those engagement surveys, they ask you, do you trust your immediate supervisor? Does your immediate supervisor live the values of the company? And so on. So measuring culture isn't as mystifying as a lot of people think. You know, how do you measure your culture? Well, it's just a feeling when I come in. Well, yeah, that's good too. You know, it's better to have rock solid data, which we're big fans of, aren't we, Adrian?
Yeah, and we do surveys for organizations on their, you know, with our company, The Culture Works, we do surveys for organizations of their culture. And so we look at things like, you know, do people feel aligned to the culture? Do they understand what we're trying to accomplish here? But three big E's that we look for are, are employees engaged, which everybody looks for? The other, though, we found as an accelerator of engagement is, are they enabled? Do they feel not only empowered, but supported? And are they energized? You know, do they have the energy to keep going in these crisis, crazy times? So really, we look for some themes within cultures. Jester's exactly right. It all ties back to trust. If I don't trust my manager, there's very little chance I'm going to feel engaged, enabled, and energized, or feel aligned to this culture.
I'm sure you've read or seen the It's the Manager studies from Gallup. I think they came out pre-pandemic. And you mentioned employee engagement earlier, Adrian, and it talks about global engagement numbers, like 15%, I think was the number. US was in the 30, low 30s. And it, the one of the recommendations is the concept of a manager that's coaching forward, or, you know, a coaching enabled manager. And I just want to get, I'd love to get your perspective on this, because you just talked about being the manager's best friend. And it's almost like that middle manager in the workforce today is more important than ever. They're closer to the buying experience, the customer experience, the employee experience. And like, how do you think about that? I mean, is that on the right track for company? You know, so much of the investment has always been at the very, very top of the HR, you know, part of the org. Where can you get better at being middle out?
You know, that's such an insightful point you're making, Sam, because when we see organizations, they spend typically thousands and thousands of dollars developing their senior leaders during a year, and several hundred dollars developing the middle managers. But who has the biggest impact on my work experience is my immediate supervisor. As you say, Gallup has studied this extensively, saying, you know, most of my experience, most of my engagement, et cetera, will come from my middle manager. So are we putting, you know, the tools in place to really help train the most misunderstood and unappreciated group of people, which is our middle managers, right, Chess?
Yeah. And you know, that has been a drumbeat for some time now, right? The most impact on my personal engagement is going to be my immediate supervisor. And I do not disagree with that. I think we need to change the conversation a little bit, though, and put some onus on the employee as well. I mean, you should be responsible for your personal engagement. It's so easy. I the only thing I worry about the Gallup study is it kind of gives us all permission to say, not my fault. I got a crappy manager, you know, and, you know, he was crappy when I got here and he's still crappy after I'm leaving. This idea that, yes, you've got to work with your manager, you got to build trust and so on. There's also an onus on us to own our own engagement and to find meaning in our work and to make it work as well. And I think if you've got both parties working hard, you know, the manager and supervisor that's trying, you know, using all those tools and self-educating or getting the training, as well as empowering your employees to say, look, you can't just show up and say, engage me. You've got to take some personal responsibility there as well.
I'm a football guy. So I love to put words on walls, mission, vision, core values, standards, what you believe in, how we're going to do it. You know, everybody's got to memorize it. You got to, I worked for a company called Lifetime Fitness, and I still hate the fact that I can't forget the mission statement. They just like, they just drilled it. I could rattle it. I'm not going to do it, but I can never forget it. I'm interested in, because we double click on culture, are there any values or standards that you think are more important today? If I'm a C-level leader or startup, and I'm saying, I want to define my culture and I got to put it on paper, and I'm sitting in a Starbucks by myself right now. What type of advice do you have?
I would say, look, transparency is a huge word right now, and transparency is coupled immediately with communication. You know, you've got to be more transparent. You've got to be more communicative than ever. You know, people are filling in these communication voids with all kinds of negativity. So, and along with that is, and this is a tough one for a lot of leaders, is vulnerability, you know, and the ability to empathize. We're asking leaders to be a lot more genuine in work and engage. And, you know, those are the words that I would write down. I'd say, are we communicating enough? Are we transparent enough? You know, are we vulnerable? Are we empathetic? And then the last one, and we always come back to it. Do our people feel valued and engaged? Do we express the gratitude to them for their work and all their sacrifices on a regular basis? So that's kind of my big five. Adrian always has more, so I'll pass it to you.
Well, I don't think I would add any specific words, because one of the problems is that sometimes we'll have these, and what we say is, look, when we help organizations develop their values, and they can't be aspirational. So what you can't do is launch, hey, our values are integrity and transparency, and people kind of go, we are the least transparent organization on the planet. And you go, well, yeah, but it's an aspirational. They have to be things that actually we live. And so I think Chester's exactly right. Those are things that organizations, and Sam, you know, in your work, those are things organizations should be doing in their cultures. But if you're not doing them right now, take a step. Make sure your vision and your values, especially, are things that are attainable and they're realistic in the culture. Otherwise, they'll become motherhood and apple pie. They'll be, people make fun of them. They won't live them. They really do have to be things that are embodied within who we really are at our core.
Well, that's a powerful point. I haven't thought about it that way, is, you know, starting from where you are versus, yeah, reading a John Wooden book and saying, okay, I like this piece of the pyramid. I like this one. And then I'm going to start from it.
Yeah, you know, Sam, the reason I think that really works and resonates is you're a football guy. We're hockey guys. Okay, so
we can use Gretzky quotes or we want to use.
That's right. You know, I always joke with my friends, particularly the baseball fans. You know, I'm a fan of all the sports, but I'm a diehard baseball fan. I'm a diehard basketball fan. I said, yes, but if a fight breaks out, you want to have a hockey player on your side. There's no doubt about it.
Totally. We had just getting into this new quarter. Even our team here, we're using the LA Kings story. We kicked off our quarter telling the LA Kings story from a few years back, the eighth seed that figured out a way to stay together and kind of keep it together in playoff mode. I'm going to throw this right out into the middle. And one of my final questions is, remote work good?
You know, I'd love to jump in on this. I think this has been one of the silver linings of this pandemic, is that many people have found out, you know, it actually can work. There is, you know, some people love to have the teamwork and love to have the camaraderie. But, you know, I wrote a piece on this for Forbes not too long ago, where surveys are showing that most people want to have some degree of flexibility now as they may be coming back to work. You know, in fact, the majority say, I'd love to come in maybe 3 days and work two and come in, you know, and you know, et cetera. In fact, but the only group that doesn't want to work remote were the 20-year-olds. Vast majority said, no, I want to come in. I'm early in my career. I want more coaching. I want more direction, which was really interesting for us. So again, it comes back to what we talked about earlier. Sometimes not one size doesn't fit all, but what we have learned from this pandemic is we can make it work. Remote work can be a really powerful way to give people not only a little bit more flexibility, but we still get a lot done.
Yeah, I would just jump in and say, look, you know, it went on for over a year. So it was proof of concept, right? It actually did work. It wasn't a pandemic that lasts 3 weeks. Everybody goes, well, that sort of worked. I mean, after a year, it worked. You know, you can make it work. I would just say, you know, to use a football analogy, although I'm a hockey guy, is that know your players. You know, it. I think the answer to that is it just depends. Who are you? Like Adrian said, we found a trend in younger workers. They want to be together. IT guys, if they never saw another breathing human person ever, they would be like that, the greatest gift ever. So you've got to find that balance. What I love about remote work right now is it has expanded people's views of what does the team look like. You know, you can actually have a team member, you know, in Houston, in Hong Kong, in Singapore, in India, you know, in New York, and you can bring them together, you know, figure out the time zones, obviously. It expands your idea of what does the team look like. Now, we may have a group that meets in New York, and that's awesome. We can also beam guys in from all over the place. And yeah, I'm one of those guys that says, yeah, I kind of want to, you know, shake hands and slap people on the back and so on. So for me, that'd be great. Now, I will tell you, as social as I am, the pandemic has made me a fan of having a regular schedule, being at home and being able to eat dinner with my family, engage with my grandkids more often. So it's really going to be interesting, the future of work. And the what I would just say to everybody that's listening, know your players, know who wants to come in, know who will never come in, and know those people that need a hybrid. And the combination of all of those, I think, is going to make for a really dynamic and interesting workplace.
Gentlemen, final question for you. We're asking everybody, with future of work being kind of the main topic, what is your hope? And we'll maybe start with Adrian. What's your hope for the future of work?
You know, what I really do hope, and this ties back to our new book, Anxiety at Work, is that managers develop more empathy. One thing we have seen from this pandemic is no matter whether you're working remotely, you're going in, you're worrying about getting sick, that anxiety is a real thing and it's hitting everybody. And what we need to do is really focus in on developing greater empathy to remove stigma of talking around mental health in the workplace, to really be more supportive and to create what Chester and I are calling emotionally safe cultures that can be really powerful. That's what I really would hope we see in the future of work.
Yeah, I mean, I would just say amen to everything Adrian said. A really safe place to work emotionally more than anything. And I think what we're going to see in the future of work is much more purpose-driven work. I think it's being demanded of employees that it's not just what we do and how we do it, it's why we do it and what impact does it have on our communities. I think one of the great gifts of new generations is they make us think differently. And the generations that are coming up are saying, look, the environment's important to me. Purpose is important. Taking care of each other is important. So that purpose-driven work where it's emotionally safe to talk about those kinds of things, to me, that's my hope for the future of work. Absolutely.
Adrian, Chester, thank you for making time.
You know, one of the things the guys brought up was around focusing on the middle. And I thought that was a really important point to make today because, you know, we live in a world where 83% of workforce training dollars, they go to the top and they never quite trickle down to the people that need it most. We live in a world where the majority of workforce training is on cover your you-know-what, safety, compliance. Nothing against slip and fall, but it's not skill-building content. It's not culture-building content. And I think the point the guys made around focusing on the middle manager and developing the frontline manager who's the closest to the relationship with the majority of your workers is so critical today. Hoping for a trickle-down strategy might not quite get to the people that need it most. You know, we had a great conversation with Adrian and Chester, but we're really just scratching the surface on this topic. Highly encourage you after the pod to go and pick up a few or all of their books. Carrot Principles is a fan favorite here. Their latest book, Anxiety at Work, is very relevant today on how to help teams build resilience and handle uncertainty and getting stuff done. So head on over to your local bookstore and pick one up from Adrian and Chester. And don't forget to subscribe to Bring It In so you never miss an episode. We've got some awesome guests lined up that you're not going to want to miss. Now, back to work.